When you look at a beautifully functioning piece of technology like your smartphone or a high-end gaming PC,
Right.
it feels like magic, like everything is sleek, it's optimized, and it's designed specifically to hide all the chaos inside.
Oh, totally. It hides the chaos perfectly.
Exactly. But if you actually unscrew the back panel and, look at the motherboard, you see the reality.
Yeah, you see the mess.
It's this dizzying maze of wires and heat sinks, tiny overlapping circuits firing off a million chaotic signals a second, just to keep the screen looking pretty.
It is genuinely overwhelming when you see that raw data in motion. You suddenly realize that the smooth, polished surface you interact with every single day, it is entirely dependent on this frantic, dense underlying machinery.
Which brings us to today. Welcome to today's deep dive. We are taking out the screws and lifting the panel on the internet itself.
We really are.
We're jumping headfirst into this massive raw data dump from an anonymous internet image board thread. Specifically, it's a thread titled MCD Mashitano Chan Den.
Right.
Now, if you're listening and you've ever found yourself scrolling through an anonymous forum, you know they can look like absolute gibberish.
Oh, absolutely. Just walls of text.
Walls of inside jokes, dense internet slang, and what looks like, frankly, disjointed manic rambling.
Yeah, they are notoriously abrasive. I mean, they don't want you to understand them, but
Yeah.
that friction actually serves a purpose.
Right.
It acts as a filter, leaving behind only the most obsessed, detail-oriented users on the platform.
And that obsession is our gold mine today, because if you can sift through that digital chaos, you find out that these anonymous boards are basically the internet's unfiltered
They
subconscious.
really are.
So today's mission, we are extracting some genuinely profound, hyper-specific insights on how games are designed, how those designs secretly manipulate our social behavior, and the intense psychology driving modern creators and their fandoms.
We are going to cover immense ground today. I mean, everything from the literal mathematical algorithms used to map out digital stories, all the way to this really deep, aggressive psychoanalysis of webcomic creators.
It's the internet in its purest, most chaotic form.
Yeah.
So let's start right at the foundation, right? How digital worlds are actually built. There is a deeply fascinating debate in this thread about the hidden mechanics of game design.
Specifically, looking at how games balance complex puzzles with, telling an actual story.
Right, because a user brings up this indie game called Blueprints, and they absolutely praise it for its restraint.
Yeah, and to understand why they like it so much, you have to think about how most lore-heavy games work. They tend to drop this massive, dense textbook of fantasy history right in your lap, and then they immediately lock your progress behind an incredibly obtuse, frustrating puzzle.
Oh, it's the worst. You're trying to figure out how to align three ancient laser beams or whatever.
Right,
And by
exactly.
the time you actually solve it 40 minutes later, your brain has completely dumped all the story you just read. Like you have zero cognitive bandwidth left.
Exactly. And the thread argues that Blueprints is brilliant because it makes its puzzles intentionally, they call it baby easy, by offering these massive hints.
Right.
And in exchange, it drips out its lore in tiny, compelling snippets.
Yeah.
It perfectly manages the player's mental friction,
Which makes sense.
Yeah, if you remove the mechanical frustration of a puzzle, the player actually has the mental space to absorb the world you built.
That's a really good point. And speaking of mechanical friction, this thread goes surprisingly hard after the bullet hell genre.
Oh, they go after it.
They specifically take aim at wildly popular games like Deltarune. And just for context, if you aren't a gamer, a bullet hell is a game where your little character is basically trapped on a screen flooded with hundreds of enemy
So
projectiles.
completely covered.
Right, and your only real goal is to weave through them without getting hit.
The critique from the forum here is incredibly sharp.
Yeah.
They argue that dodging 100 glowing orbs isn't actually a deep mechanic.
Right.
It's just testing your raw reflexes and relying on prior gaming experience. I mean, they point out if you've ever played Pac-Man, you already understand the fundamental concept of avoiding a moving object.
The users call it an illusion of difficulty, but they don't just complain, which is what I love about this thread. They actually propose a massive structural fix.
Yeah, they do.
They argue these games would be infinitely deeper if they fully integrated RPG elements like role-playing game mechanics into the actual dodging.
Imagine if, instead of just running away from projectiles, the armor you chose to wear or the magic buffs you cast on yourself literally changed how the enemy bullets behaved.
Wait, like how?
Like, what if equipping a heavy shield actually slowed the bullets down on the screen? or if a specific magic ring let you absorb blue projectiles to heal yourself.
Oh, wow.
The argument is that games need to stop treating dodging and character building as two entirely separate games.
Though, to be fair to developers, another user chimes in to defend the genre, pointing out that Undertale 1 actually pioneered exactly this.
Yes, that's true.
They use different colored hearts that completely change how you interacted with the bullet patterns.
Yeah.
It forced you to, you know, synergize your attacks.
Exactly.
It's just wild to see this level of, like, peer-reviewed game theory happening in an anonymous thread.
And that analytical energy only ramps up from there. Because once they finish debating how a player interacts with a game, they start debating how developers actually map out those massive branching narratives in the first place.
Oh, yeah, the visual novels.
Right, specifically in visual novels.
Oh, okay, let's unpack this. Because they get into the actual literal mathematical graph drawing algorithms used to visualize these stories, and it is a total trip.
It really is.
They talk about something called layered graph drawing. Now, imagine drawing a family tree or, like, a corporate flow chart.
Yeah.
It starts at the top and neatly branches out downward.
Right.
The thread notes this is perfect for programming a video game skill tree.
Because a skill tree flows in one single direction. You learn Fireball, which unlocks Super Fireball, which unlocks Mega Fireball. It's linear progression.
It makes total sense.
But a visual novel isn't a tree. It's a story where your choices might branch off, sure, but then they converge back together later. Or maybe they trigger a time loop that sends you right back to the beginning.
Right. So if you try to map that out using a neat, layered, top-to-bottom graph, the mathematical depth just spirals completely out of control.
Yeah, it breaks.
It becomes this infinitely long, unreadable scroll. So naturally, you'd think, hey, let's use force-directed graph drawing.
Which sounds like a good idea.
Right. That's an algorithm that acts almost like gravity. It takes connected plot points and automatically pulls them together into clusters. And that's usually amazing for visualizing complex data networks.
But the thread concludes that this is a complete disaster for visual novels. Because the narrative paths are constantly crossing over each other, that gravity algorithm just pulls all those converging plot lines, the bad endings, the time loops, directly into the center.
It turns the entire game into a mathematical hairball. It's like trying to map out a sprawling, logical subway system using only a wet bowl of spaghetti.
That is the perfect analogy.
But, you know, are developers missing a trick by not merging these genres more completely? Or is there a beauty in keeping mechanics simple? Seeing how obsessively these users break down the invisible math of a game makes you realize something pretty major.
It's that.
These mechanical rules, the puzzles, the dodging, the graph algorithms, they aren't just background code. They dictate exactly how human beings are allowed to behave inside that digital space.
That is the crucial pivot right there. Because if game mechanics create friction for a single player, what happens when you multiply that friction across 10 real human beings in a highly competitive space?
That brings us straight into the digital sociology of this thread. The users take a magnifying glass to MOBAs.
Right, multiplayer online battle arenas.
Yeah, games like League of Legends or Dota 2. These are games where two teams of five clash in a heavily structured arena, and the thread tries to answer a question that has baffled researchers for years.
Why are these specific games the most uniquely, legendarily toxic environments on the entire internet?
The answer they land on is entirely structural.
It is. Let's use a real-world analogy here. Imagine locking five complete strangers in a commercial kitchen.
Okay.
And you tell them they have exactly 45 minutes to bake a massive, complex wedding cake. But here is the catch. Every single person has a hyper-specific job.
Right.
One person only measures flour. One person only cracks eggs. And the recipe is completely transparent to everyone in the room.
So if the guy holding the eggs drops them on the floor, the entire kitchen immediately knows the cake is ruined and everyone knows exactly whose fault it is.
Exactly. The mechanics of a MOBA are so rigid and transparent that there is literally nowhere to hide your mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And to make it even worse, the game utilizes death timers.
Oh, the death timers.
Yeah, when your character dies, you are temporarily removed from the map. You have to sit there staring at a gray screen for 30 seconds or a minute, completely helpless while the enemy team destroys your base.
You are locked in the kitchen watching the cake burn and your hands are tied behind your back.
That's it.
And what do players do when they are forced to stare at a screen with zero mechanical control over the game? They unleash hell in the text chat.
Yes, they do.
The thread argues these death timers are basically pressure valves that blow off raw verbal abuse. It turns the game into a psychological battle for domination and submission.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the structure of the digital arena strips away all the necessary social graces we rely on in the real world.
Right. The stuff we use to politely ignore each other's small failures.
Exactly. Without that grace, you only get raw, unfiltered frustration.
They even dive into how aesthetic design creates friction in these hyper-optimized spaces. There is this fascinating debate in the thread about gender dynamics.
Yeah, specifically the stereotype of female gamers, often playing the healer or support roles in multiplayer games.
The users aren't just relying on stereotypes here, though. They are debating the friction between aesthetics and mechanics.
The argument is that many support characters in these games are designed to be visually stunning, heavily stylized, or just conventionally attractive.
So the theory is that players, regardless of gender, honestly, are gravitating toward these characters because they like the look of them.
Not because they actually want to master the complex, thankless mechanics of being a high-level healer.
Right. And when someone picks a character just because they look cool, in a game that demands mathematical perfection to win, it instantly breeds resentment from the rest of the team.
Which naturally leads the forum to brainstorm how to force players to behave better through design.
Yeah, I loved this part.
One user suggests abandoning traditional RPG leveling entirely, where you just, you know, dump points into your character's stats forever.
Uh-huh.
Instead, they propose tying a player's skills entirely to the specific weapons or boots they are wearing, and they cite the game Shin Megami Tensei 3 of Worth as a prime example.
The mechanism there is brilliant. If your fireball spell is physically locked inside a specific sword, the only way to learn a new spell is to put the sword down and try using a spear. You are fundamentally forcing the human being holding the controller to experiment, adapt, and step out of their comfort zone, all without them ever realizing they are being manipulated by the code.
It's basically behavioral psychology disguised as a video game.
But I want to ask you, is the game design actually breeding this toxicity, or do these games just act as a perfect high-pressure magnifying glass for normal human frustration?
That's the million-dollar question. It's probably a bit of both. But it's one thing for an anonymous forum to analyze the psychology of the player holding the controller. The tone of the thread shifts entirely when they turn that exact same analytical obsession onto the psychology of the people making the art.
Oh, man. And this is where the internet gets genuinely intimidating.
It gets tense.
The thread launches into a literal dissertation-length psychoanalysis of a specific webcomic creator. They refer to the creator as Hussy or Woodstock,
which is thinly veiled internet slang for Andrew Hussy, the mind behind the massive, culturally dominant webcomic Homestuck.
The intensity of the breakdown is staggering. These anonymous users aren't just critiquing the art, they are practically reverse engineering the author's brain.
They theorize that the author displays traits of untreated bipolar disorder, and they actually point to the narrative mechanics of the comic as their proof.
They bring up these incredibly dense concepts like iterative characterization and persona alchemy. Let me break that down.
Please do.
Imagine a writer isolating one of their own real-life personality traits, say, an intense, petty need for validation.
Okay.
They put that trait in a petri dish, add a dash of sci-fi, and grow an entirely separate character out of it.
The theory is that the author uses this persona alchemy to basically fracture his own ego.
Yeah.
He projects the idealized, cool versions of himself into the heroes, like Dave and Solix.
Right.
But then he takes his darkest, most insecure flaws and injects them into the villains, like an obnoxious alien named Caliborn, or this sadistic narrator character, Doc.
It creates a mechanism where the creator can safely interact with his own worst impulses on the page without ever actually having to confront them in the mirror.
Exactly.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Because the level of detail is amazing, but is it just me, or is it wildly arrogant to diagnose a total stranger with a psychiatric condition just by reading their comic strip?
Oh, it is incredibly presumptuous.
Yeah.
You absolutely cannot diagnose a human being through a webcomic.
You are essentially playing armchair psychologist with a fictional story.
But honestly, the accuracy of their diagnosis isn't really the point here. What matters is the phenomenon of the attempt itself.
What do you mean?
This is a massive evolution in how audiences consume media. 50 years ago, literary critics obsessed over the text itself. Today, digital fandoms bypass the text completely and try to dissect the soul of the creator.
Wow, yeah. And that intense, boundary-destroying obsession doesn't just stop at the creator. The thread maps out exactly how the fans themselves mutated over time.
They do. They literally pinpoint a single day October 20th, when the culture around this specific webcomic irrevocably changed.
They attribute a massive spike in the comic's popularity entirely to highly controversial, shocking fandom events occurring on that exact day.
Right. They cite plot lines involving gay aliens suddenly dropping, and that collided with a viral real-world incident.
Yeah, where a cosplayer from an anime called Hitalia was photographed doing something highly inappropriate at a Holocaust memorial.
It was a perfect storm of internet drama.
Let's look at the mechanism of what happened there, because it explains so much of modern internet culture. When a community of fans is suddenly thrust into the spotlight because of a massive, polarizing, real-world controversy, the nature of the group fundamentally changes.
It does.
You aren't just a book club anymore. You are suddenly trauma bonding or shock bonding over this extreme event.
Exactly. The shared object of the community is no longer discussing the comic. The shared object becomes defending the group's identity against the rest of the internet. And the thread argues that this shared controversy permanently collapsed the social boundaries of the forum.
They complain that fandoms used to just be normal people talking about a shared interest. You know, we're on a forum, we talk about this thing.
Keep it simple.
But post-controversy, they transformed into what the thread calls overly intimate fake friend networks. Users started acting out embarrassing theater kid behavior, like playing virtual spin the bottle in character on the message boards.
Yeah, the forum became this weird enmeshed family unit. It's a profound look at how desperately lonely people are, using digital chaos to basically replace their actual social support systems.
But, you know, the true magic of this image board thread is that it doesn't give you a single moment to process any of this profound sociological weight.
Not even a second. The whiplash is instantaneous.
Oh, it's incredible. Because literally right underneath a 2,000-word psychological autopsy of a webcomic creator's fractured ego, a totally different anonymous user pivots to furiously complaining that Twinkies have gotten smaller.
And that they are now individually wrapped.
Right. And right below that, someone is urgently asking the forum if it's cost-effective or even medically safe to eat a two-week-old rotisserie chicken.
Followed immediately by someone demanding to know why modern house cats have seemingly lost their natural evolutionary instinct to catch flies.
It's absurd, but it perfectly highlights the flattening effect of the digital world.
It really does. On an anonymous board, there is no hierarchy of importance. A debate about the digestive consequences of ancient chicken carries the exact same emotional weight, the same urgency and formatting as someone analyzing why the YouTube algorithm is suddenly force-feeding everyone random videos with fewer than 100 views.
It all exists in the exact same emotional space.
Yeah.
And now, as we wade into the final layer of this digital tapestry, we're going to hit the rawest nerve of all. Modern political discourse.
Double.
And just as a quick, important reminder for you listening right now, I want to be very clear. We are strictly acting as mirrors here.
Yeah.
We aren't endorsing, validating, or taking sides on any of the viewpoints we are about to discuss. We are simply unpacking the raw, highly polarized reality of what is actually written in this source material.
This raises an important question. How do we process an environment where the mundane and the existential are violently smashed together like this? Because the political anger in this thread swings wildly across the entire spectrum with zero warning.
Totally. On the right side of the spectrum, you have intense anti-woke sentiments. Users are complaining bitterly about what they label woke mind viruses.
Right.
They specifically target modern video games, pointing for a game called Dustborne as an example of forced diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI representation.
They also aim heavy cynicism at corporate culture, mocking large companies for corporatizing and commercializing pride flags just to hit marketing quotas. But the language there is angry, defensive, and highly mobilized.
But then you literally scroll down your screen 2 inches.
Literally 2 inches.
And the entire thread violently shifts into a heavily left-wing, anti-traditionalist attack on a completely different target.
Yes. The forum goes after the creator of a webcomic called Sinfest, an author named Tatsuya. The users are furious, tracking how he completely abandoned his early feminist themes to embrace hyper-traditionalist anti-Soviet and anti-Semitic storylines.
They track his daily output with terrifying precision. They note that he spent exactly 167 days straight drawing bizarre, deeply uncomfortable World War II villain arcs.
They are absolutely bewildered and enraged by his political pivot.
And the wild thing is, the users attacking the woke mind virus and the users attacking the anti-Semitic webcomic, they are operating in the exact same thread.
Sharing the exact same digital oxygen as the guy worried about his Twinkie.
It is exhausting just to read.
It is exhausting, but it is the most honest reflection of how the human brain actually operates when the social filters are removed. We bounce from profound psychological insight to deep political rage to mundane hunger, all in the span of 30 seconds.
Which brings us right back to you, listening to this deep dive. When you step back and look at the sheer density of human thought contained in this one single thread, it's staggering.
It really is.
Whether you are booting up a competitive multiplayer game tonight, reading a comic on your phone, or just trying to figure out why YouTube recommended you a video with 12 views, these hidden sociological currents are actively shaping your life.
Every day.
The mechanics are designed to make you feel a certain way. And the digital communities you join are subtly, invisibly rewiring how you interact with the real world.
And that leaves us with one final, deeply provocative thought that is briefly brushed upon in the source material.
What's that?
The thread casually mentions how modern artificial intelligence models are developing longer and longer contextual memories. You know, they're remembering more of the raw data they scrape from the web.
Right. They are training on the very forums we just spent 20 minutes dissecting.
Exactly. If anonymous image boards currently act as the messy, chaotic, unfiltered subconscious of humanity, what happens to human culture when our future AI models are entirely trained on this exact kind of hyper-analytical, deeply polarized, emotionally flattened discourse?
Wow.
We are literally feeding it brilliant game theory mixed with bitter political rage and, well, ancient rotisserie chicken.
Are we unwittingly building a digital mind that fundamentally thinks, reacts, and argues exactly like an anonymous image board user?
It's entirely possible.
We thought we were just lifting the panel to see the chaotic wiring underneath the internet. But if that chaotic, unfiltered sludge is the exact data we are using to train the artificial minds of the future,
yeah.
Maybe those wires aren't just running the machine anymore. Maybe they are writing the blueprint for whatever comes next.